Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. A few years ago, I was let go from a job. As a result of restructuring within the company, half my team and I were told basically not to come in the following day. It wasn't the greatest piece of news I've ever been given, but apart from being worried about how I'm going to pay my bills, I was fine. I didn't feel a sense of loss, and I didn't really need to or had to go through a grieving process. That's not the case for everybody, though, because some of my friends and people I know were devastated, completely devastated after losing their jobs, not because of financial reasons, but because, in a way, they lost part of themselves. Work is where we spend most of our waking hours. It's only natural that it becomes part of who we are. Where is the line, though? When is it too much? Same goes for the people we work with, who become our support network, our lives, basically. And when and if we lose the job, we also lose them. Naturally, rather than debate this on my own, I had to talk to somebody about this. And this someone is the person who actually prompted this topic in the first place when we spoke a few weeks ago. And that is Natalia Morgan, who's the head of online marketing at Advanced Metrics. And with a degree in European Studies from King's College London, Natalia blends the international experience and linguistic versatility with strategic vision. And living in Zurich, she has some interesting observations about the challenges faced by foreigners in Switzerland related to support networks and the identity that we create as in connection with our work. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Natalia, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Alec. Thanks for having me.
Let's break the ice, and we do it in the usual fashion. When you were little, who did you want to be when you grew up?
So thanks for sending me the question or prompt a little bit in advance, because I had to think about it for a moment. I think there were two career directions that I was interested in. The first one was fashion designer. I really just thought that was the coolest job because you could just create artwork that you could wear every day. And then I changed, I think, and I wanted to be a television reporter, and I wanted to be on TV with a camera and travel and investigate. And I think it was vanity more than anything that I just wanted to be on TV.
Which one of these do you feel closer to now? Or maybe which of these two you feel you incorporate more in your adult life or in your work?
Probably right now, the fashion designer. Not that I'm making anything for anybody else, but I did recently get gifted a sewing machine. So I am actually teaching myself to sew. So I am living out a little bit of that childhood dream.
Fantastic. Listen, I can put you in touch with my mother. The communication might be difficult because she only speaks Polish, but she's a seamstress by trade, and she did that for many
oh, wow.
years, actually. So even though that she's in her 70s, she's still my sisters and I go-to person when we need anything kind of fixing, redoing, be it curtains or anything like that. It's, Mum, do you mind? And she goes, yeah, let's just give it. And she's really good at it.
Yeah, I can start to identify. I think I'm becoming that person as well in my social group.
All of a sudden, you're going to be, your friends are going to be calling me out. Listen, I bought this pair of jeans.
Oh, yeah.
But they're a bit too long. Would you mind?
That happened to me like yesterday.
There you go. You're already there. It's fantastic to have you here. And as I said in the introduction, you prompted this topic in a way when we spoke a few weeks, because there is this pattern going beyond the aspect of referring to our companies and our teams, oh, we're like a family, which is an interesting concept in itself that is for another probably conversation. I'm conflicted about that. And it's just said, well, never, it shouldn't be that way. But then when I think about it, most families do have some sort of dysfunction in them, which is actually quite accurate in terms of how our teams and our organizations work. So it actually might not be a bad analogy. But as I said, for a separate topic, identity at work. When we spoke, you said that you've noticed that especially around people coming to Zurich, because it's a city that a lot of people come to for work, not knowing anyone in particular, especially if they come from abroad, from outside of Switzerland. And that is particularly difficult for them to integrate themselves in the culture, and therefore they throw themselves into work, and the kind of the support network comes from their work. Would you be able to tell us a little bit more about what were you noticing? Kind of what were the first kind of signs of that when you saw that? And we'll take it from there.
Yeah, sure. I think just to start off, Zurich itself is an incredibly international city. I think there was a study even a couple of days ago, up something like 40% of the people are not Swiss born or have some kind of other identity or nationality or dual citizenship or something like that. So it's really quite a high percentage of people that either have moved to Zurich from another country or have been born in the country, but, you know, from a different cultural background. And so there's such a like melting pot or a mix of cultures in Zurich. But at the same time, there is a very strong Swissness and Swiss identity to the Swiss German population, or the, you know, the Swiss German speaking population that are born and bred in Zurich or around in the neighborhoods around. And I find that these two groups, at least in my experience, difficult to them to mix completely. You know, I mean, I've been living in Zurich more than 20 years and I grew up at an international school here and I've got lots of friends who've come and go, but really like a close-knit group of Swiss-born Zurich friends. You know, I don't have a group. I have a couple of individual friends here and there, but I find that somehow there's still this very big divide in the city. And I find that's quite interesting. It comes down to, again, a lot when you look for work. And a lot of people who move to Zurich from another country find an international position, because the language is an element, of course. You have to, you know, speak or work in English to then have an international job here. And if you don't speak German, it's very difficult, like very, very difficult to then get into a Swiss company. You have to then prove to them to have, you know, a certain level of the language. And so that then just accentuates this divide from my experience. And I've now had experience in both. I've been working for a couple of years in a Swiss agency with, you know, Swiss German speaking clients. My team is also Swiss German speaking, and I get by still kind of like a sore thumb. I'm the international one, and the clients know that I'm not native Swiss German speaker, but hopefully with my expertise, they're convinced anyway. But I also did the other thing. I worked then in a very, very, very international company that pride themselves on this internationalism and bringing people from other countries in to work in the headquarter office in Zurich. So I've kind of seen both now. And I'm honestly, I don't know which. I mean, they're both great. They both have their things, but it's difficult for the person to make the switch, I think, between the two, if they're not, yeah, like sitting in both worlds like I am.
Yeah, you're right. It is about that switch, because when we arrive in a new place, we don't know anyone. I've been in that situation when I moved to the UK. I moved at a different age because I moved at early 20s to go to university, to do my second degree. Different circumstances you go into. It's far more social. You go out with people, you meet them. And obviously, yes, that becomes your world as well, those people that you meet and who you integrate. But it's slightly got a different dynamic because also, yeah, a different stage in your life. But when you do that for work, it is different, okay? You come in, be it in the UK, Switzerland, Germany, Poland, wherever else. I'm curious about, because it is for me, I love what I do. I really do. And that's why it's so easy. I've gotten kind of a capability of going working too much and going into burnout, that not to work too much, right? But therefore, I identify myself with the work that I do because it aligns with my values. I'm in that lucky position. But it's a dangerous thing. It's a double-edged sword, really. But a lot of people do the same thing as they... You know, even they perceive themselves through the lens of what they do, not who they are, but it's that their job title, the job that they do. It's not about importance. It's just that they feel that's part of them. How do you see that? Do you notice that? What is your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that comes down to a lot of different factors, especially recently, particularly when I see, like, you know, on LinkedIn, for example, how people are encouraged to promote their career and their title, their achievements, their qualifications, everything as part of their online digital footprint. It's difficult to kind of separate from that when, like you said at the beginning, I mean, we spend, you know, at least 8 hours a day in our work identity, in our work roles. And then with remote working, with hybrid working, it's even the line is even more blurred because you can then have unconventional work hours. People could be working, you know, from all around the world, taking meetings at different times of the day. So that, you know, that switch where it used to be, okay, 6 p.m., I can just turn off now, that doesn't necessarily exist for a lot of people anymore. And so it's a kind of, it's just become so much easier to let it infiltrate, I guess, your work identity into what happens outside of your work life. And then again, if, like we were saying, if you've moved into a new place or a new company and you don't know anyone, you don't have a support network of, you know, hobbies or activities where you meet other people, which in adult life, not like being a student where you can just go to the pub and you meet people, because everybody needs friends. When you're an adult, people have got other things to do, right? So you don't necessarily make friends so easily. Then your work becomes kind of everything. And you hang out with your work friends outside of your work day. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the kind of, I guess we'll get onto the intertwined, but we'll get onto the support network in a while. But I thought I don't know how often you go to networking events of any sort, being kind of social meetups or work
reluctantly, related. Yeah.
Reluctantly, but I'm guessing if you don't have a name tag, or even if you do, but that doesn't say what you do. If you think about it, one of the first, it's usually in the top three questions. Usually it's the second one. First one is, hi, what's your name? And second one, what do you do? Sometimes the second one is replaced with something else, and the third
one
is,
where are you from?
Or maybe, yeah, if the second is where you're from, and the third one then becomes, what do you do? I get where that's coming from. I appreciate that it is the most natural and easy way to break the ice. I genuinely get that. So all judgment removed from what I'm saying. But there are genuinely a half a dozen other questions that...
So many more interesting things to ask.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Mm. Because, you know, if you get me started, I can be talking to you about workplace culture until the cows come home 7 days from now, right? Without taking a breath. I don't want to do that because I know that it can be overwhelming to people and not everybody might be interested in that. So I don't want to be doing that. I'm far more interested in, you know, who you are as a person. And obviously, it will naturally come out what you do for work because we've got that connection, because we identify it with it so much, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think for some people who, there are some job titles that are self-explanatory. You say, what do you do? I'm a doctor. I'm an architect. I am a lawyer. People understand that. That was a very clear professional, you know, trajectory. You studied your thing. You've got your diploma. Now you work in that field. You don't need follow-up questions.
Easy, yeah.
I'm sure if you tell somebody I'm a workplace culture designer, they say, well, what is that?
Yeah, what would you do? I had this exchange on LinkedIn on the comment. Somebody commented on somebody's post this morning who said it wasn't something to do with recruitment and how you can position yourself and what do you do, I think, was kind of the prompt at the top of the post. And I just commented with, the classic Chandler Bing question, what do you do? Because obviously no one knew what Chandler Bing
job?
From
yeah.
Friends, yeah, what was his job? And I found that the same. I it was very difficult for me for many years because I'm a generalist by nature. I can do pretty much any job with enough training and enough time. And it's always been difficult for me to answer that question. And as you said, unless you've got, and you're an architect, you're a lawyer, you're an engineer, you're a doctor, whatever, insert a renowned, certifiable profession, many people struggle with that. It's like, for example, I'm sure you must have had, I guess when you say, I work in marketing, I'm a head of marketing, they kind of go, oh, cool. They might not understand what it means, what it involves, but they kind of get it.
I just say Google and they look at me like, oh, okay. But yeah, and I think also now more than ever, it's even harder because, I mean, you can change jobs so quickly and people do, right? So you start off, maybe you did start off as an engineer or you started off studying like some kind of, you know, business development or you know, these generalist degrees as well. And maybe I'm head of online marketing now. Maybe I won't be in a few years time or in 10 years time, I'll be something else. And then how, you know, the title of your job is just the title of your job. What I do is not described in these four words of my title, right? I have many. I wear many hats.
I'll challenge you on that. I'll challenge you. For you, it might not be. For me, it might not be. Or it might be, actually, in my case. But I'm aware of that. For many people, it is. It is hidden. You know, especially when you've got a doctor, professor, whatever. People do get, they do get attached to that. Even through the simplest of lenses of, I've gone through hell of medical school or law school to get this. This is kind of my little reward, in inverted commas, of course. I deserve that. And yeah, crack on, listen, absolutely. If that's what you needed, if that's what it means to you, go for it. But a lot of people do have that association with that, that it actually means more to them on a psychological and personal and emotional level than they probably realize. And I've got a feeling, I've got a theory why that might be. But before I reveal that, do you? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something to that. There are some things that you take with you, right? If you have a doctorate, you can put a doctor in front of your name. No one's going to stop you, right? And that you take with you then forever. And you go into the old people's home and people can still call you doctor. So there are certain things that, yeah, they last, or they are part of that, those accolades that you've collected for yourself somehow. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to identity, I think that's a personal, you got to choose which ones you want to take and which ones you want to leave behind. And maybe at some point, somebody who's studied all their life to do a particular thing and then realize, I don't like it at all. I mean, mm-hmm. I met somebody when I was on a holiday and I was learning to scuba dive, and I was talking to my instructor and I said, well, how long have you been doing this? And, you know, how long have you been being a dive master and things? And he said, well, actually, I'm a surgeon by trade. Oh, okay. Yeah. So he had a very, you know,
diverse background.
Yeah. He had a very strict upbringing, and his parents had told him, you'd better get one of these. You got to do medicine, law, whatever. You got to do one of these degrees. You've got to study. And he got there and he finished all of his studies. And then he said, this is not me. This is not what I want to do at all. And he changed career completely. So yeah, it's a question of what you find defines you. Has to come from yourself. It's not the accumulation of the titles that you've got. Some people find that a sense of pride, and absolutely, if you've studied your ass off and you've got something, then absolutely you should be proud of that.
Be proud of it. You worked for it, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. As I said, zero judgment on that. Before I go on a separate topic, you mentioned university degrees and things like that. A few weeks ago, I heard that a university in the UK, don't remember which one, and I'm pretty certain it's only for now, at least, it was in the online version, but they've actually opened a degree, a full university degree, higher education degree, in being an influencer.
Great.
Now,
love it.
I thought,
it's great for my job. I mean, it's great. Brings validation to online marketing like you wouldn't believe, because it is
definitely
being an influencer is a career, and they should learn to manage business properly, because they just get taken advantage of.
That's true. I don't know what the content of the program is, but I'm kind of in two minds about that. It's simply linked to what we just mentioned, as some, you know, there are degrees in everything. And I was talking to another guest a few weeks ago about what the university degree these days is not worth as much as it used to be 50 years ago, because then it was simply the scarcity of it, the fact not everybody had it. It was a privilege or an opportunity of a license for somebody to go to university. Now, pretty much everybody goes to university, right? I'm generalizing, obviously, in the developed world. But that's how it is. So by having that, in a way, it's devalued. And that questions what we actually learn at universities, whether we learn at university or whether we learn afterwards when we apply those skills in real life, and how, in many ways, kind of out of date the programs might be, because they're not what the companies are looking for when the people come out of them to go into work. But I'll break myself back from that tangent to what you've mentioned about how we identify what people do. And when we chose this dive master example that you gave, when, I don't know about you, so I'll speak just for myself. I had zero clue what I wanted to do with my life when I was 18 and had to choose my university degree. And again, without offense to anyone, I'm pretty certain most 18, 19-year-olds, they have zero clue as well. So that's where we kind of ended up in these situations, where people have gone to degrees to do the work, sometimes being really pressured into it by their families, because everybody's a doctor, so you will be a doctor as well. And then realizing they're, you know, 40s or 50s, so this is not what I want to do. And this is a fascinating topic, because I think as we live longer, our work lives will be different as well. So people will be changing careers. There's a lot of research to say that, you know, people born in 1998 have a 50% chance to live over 100. And that increases year by year. So kids born today, we've got pretty much guaranteed that they will live over 100 if things go well, which means that they will have to have a different life in terms of work. They won't follow that same path of going to university or kind of reposition themselves. So I wonder, how will that affect people's identities and their connection with work?
Well, I hope that they would take it a little bit more relaxed, and realize that you can switch. You know, you don't have to be one person forever. And your skills that you learn, I'm talking about, you know, soft skills, transferable skills, are always valuable, right? So at the moment, my skill set in online marketing is I can run campaigns on YouTube. And I'm, you know, pretty, you know, every day I'm running, doing campaigns, doing advertising, doing marketing, talking about KPIs and goals and stuff. Those are the practical things that I can do in my job. My actual skills, the ones that I consider my real skills, are communication, teamwork, leadership. And those things are not tied to any kind of title, right? That's not tied to, you know, what my day-to-day operative part of my work. That is, you know, those are the things that I take also outside of work, right? So everything that you learn in your work day doesn't mean those things are not transferable then, you know, in other elements of your life. Mm. And I think that's where the focus is or should be hopefully going somehow. And like you said, you know, what are the degrees? Some of these degrees, what are they for in the end? I'm a perfect example, right? I studied European studies in itself. What is that? It's kind of a generalist thing. Thinking, yeah, I mean, I like international relations because I like to speak languages and I like to talk to different people from different places. I guess I'll just narrow it down to Europe, I suppose. I just did that then. And yeah, I met a lot of interesting people. I understood Brexit much better when it happened, obviously, because I could understand the mechanisms. But I don't use that knowledge in my job right now, right? When I can have interesting dinner conversations, you know, but that's the extent of it at the moment. But there are things that you learn, right? Analytical skills, critical thinking, and, you know, teamwork, project work, things like that, which are transferable and are important, right? And whether you can get them elsewhere, absolutely, you don't have to get them at university for that kind of a job or a degree or whatever. Clearly, there were people in my degree who did go on and work in politics or work in the government and things like that. You know, I've got some friends who working in the Foreign Office, and they are using to a certain extent, you know, the knowledge actually that they gathered. I'm just not. I'm just something else.
A fun fact about me, I did two university degrees, two bachelor degrees in completely unrelated fields, and I'll reveal those in a sec. But neither of these were my idea. They weren't forced on me, but somebody else planted the idea of what to do. So when I was a teenager, not having a clue what to do with my life, trying to choose a degree, my sister went, well, you know, you always had a kind of a bit of a knack for English. Well, why don't you go in that direction? It was mostly because I was glued to Cartoon Network for 12 hours a day and from the age of 6 for God knows how many years. And I went, actually, that's not a bad idea. So I ended up doing English studies. Then when I was about to graduate, I, again, was in a position, as many people are who are graduating, oh my God, real life starts now. I don't want it. I want to do something else. So what do? You escape to do another degree. Some people do a master's. I decided to do event management, which, again, wasn't my idea. It was my friend who said, actually, you know, you are kind of like a bit of a linchpin in our group. You're the one that organizes stuff. And how about you do something with that? And I'm like, okay, event management it is. 3 years later and so on. So the funny thing is...
You would have done a third one as well.
No, I was done. I was done. Actually, funny enough, after that degree, straight away, I did a CIM, Chartered Institute of Marketing certificate in the UK. I did that for a year. Straight to university, I realized I've been in education for like 14 years straight. I've had enough. And I've actually since haven't done any proper education as such. Obviously, courses and certificates here and there, but not at a kind of part-time / full-time level at the same period of time. I learn through doing and researching and building things. That's how I learn. But I do, in a way, connect those things. As Steve Jobs said, I can connect the dots looking backwards, because if it wasn't for the English studies degree, I would be able to go to university in the UK, but it did help a lot. Event management obviously gave me the opportunity to be organized and kind of spoke to my personality, project management, marketing, and so on. And if I circle back, what I do now, we're being a facilitator, a designer, and that goes back to the first degree, which is not only about English, but also prepared me to be a teacher, which I never really planned on being, but that was the only courses available at that time. So I'm utilizing the methodological knowledge and the psychology of how to teach from that. So in a way, I do incorporate these things. There was no way I could have known that.
But that's how life is, right? You take what you can and you build on the skills that you have, the knowledge you have, and that's all you have at your disposal, right? So it's only natural that one thing leads to another and you take it then with you. If you're somebody who's developing and changing and moving in different directions and things, then I think that's a natural development or evolution of your work identity, right?
Yeah, indeed. I'll take that back to identity, and I'll introduce my theory about why I believe we get so really deeply connected with the work that we do. One of it is because, as we said, most of our waking hours are spent at work, if you look across the week. The other one, and this might get philosophical here, I believe is because we don't know enough about ourselves at a deeper level. We don't have that self-awareness of who we are, what we want from life, what our needs are, that it's easier to escape and attach it to something like work and have our validation and our identity as a result of that. That it simply replaces that gap that we have.
I think validation is a key word in that your work identity is so easily measured or kind of explained or reviewed. We have yearly reviews with our managers. They tell us, this is what you're good at. This is what you've done well. This is where you need to improve. Puts you in such a nice little box where you can say, well, I can tick these things. I'm good at these things and I can improve here. And then you have like clear goals and it very such structures at least 40 odd hours of your life a week of what you're working towards. And in your personal life, nobody does that with you, right? So, okay, yes, there are a lot of people, hopefully, that are, you know, working on themselves, doing, you know, internal introspection and going to therapy and working on themselves. And, you know, that's what some people are doing. Not everybody's doing that, though. So not everybody's setting goals for themselves. Not everybody's setting, you know, like markers of, okay, where can I be improving? What are elements of my relationships or my communication style? Or how I, you know, appear in the world or how I'm, you know, relating to things. You just don't work on that necessarily unless you, you know, take the time and you do it for yourself. And so in the work, the validation of, you know, I'm good at my job, therefore I have a purpose. It's really comforting. And as soon as you don't have that and you just say, okay, well, am I good at being a human being? Like, who's going to tell me that?
Yeah.
That's very daunting and it's scary. And then you think, well, maybe I'm not good at being a human being. I don't know. My mother doesn't call me back, or my best friend has another friend, or, you know, and you have all of these other feelings that you don't get in the workplace, right? I mean, not as intensely because your self-confidence or all of that kind of stuff is so easily defined or so easily, put
it
out.
It seems like a bit of a form of kind of escapism now that I think about it, that we don't know who we are, what's important to us, what's our purpose. And it's simply easier to attach it to work than to confront the fact that we don't know. And it's uncomfortable to sit with ourselves because we do have this tendency. I'm fascinated by the concept of internal and external motivation. Like, for example, I go to the gym regularly two, three times a week. And I've been doing that for God knows how many years, because I've got internal motivation. I want to move well. My motivation is, for example, that when I have kids and when I've got grandkids, when I'm in my 80s or 90s, I want to be able to lift them over my head, right? Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that, I need to do that now. So that's kind of my motivator internally. Other people get motivated by external factors, like because it's January, so I need to start getting into shape. Or because they follow Instagram influencers on and they want to look kind of them. In a way, yes, could be a motivator, but again, it's an external motivator and internal. And the identity element is the same here, I think, is that it's easier to look at the external and say, yeah, I've got my job, I'm going to identify with that. I'm going to substitute that as my identity because it's easier.
Yeah, and I mean, so much security comes from your job. You know, like I have a job, therefore I can keep my lights on in my house. Therefore, the job is arguably the most important thing that I do because I can, you know, provide for myself, for my family. And so it's so vital. And then if you take that away, you know, if everybody had in a, you know, wonderful utopic, whatever, socialist society, everybody had their lights on all the time and nobody had to actually work, then we would have so much more time to be creative and to develop, you know, the parts of your identity that you don't have time for, you know, during the workday, whatever. And maybe, you would then discover some completely other elements to yourself. Well, then even maybe not. They would be the same things. You would just be applying them in different ways.
How much, on the spot, and I'll happily follow up with an answer of my own to this question. But when you look at your situation, your work, and who you are as a person, how much of you is you at work, and other elements of you from your personal life that are not at work? How much of that identity is tied? Have you ever thought of that?
I mean, I don't think I've thought of it in that way, but I can say this. I never thought I would be a marketing executive when I started my job, right? It's something that I kind of fell into. I applied to a job that said Spanish speaker needed, and I said, I can do that. And then they gave me the job with little to no digital marketing experience, but I could speak the language. So then I learned it on the go, right? And then since then, 6 years later, or whatever, I've developed my expertise and now I'm running a marketing team. Mm. So for me, my job or the operative elements of the day-to-days of my job is, I don't find, is my person or is not my identity, because it's not really what defines what I get my value from. What I do get my value from is the leadership element of my job or the management element of my job, right? That I like to work with a team and I like to bring out the best in people. But that I've been doing my whole life. So that I've been when I was in a dance troupe when I was 15, when I was a football team, when I was, you know, at school. My partner would tell you that I manage him in the home as well. So, you know, it's something that I do anyway. And that, because those are the parts that I enjoy, or those are the parts that I instinctively go towards, right? So whether or not I'm putting campaigns online or I don't know, running a restaurant, to be honest, yeah, those are the parts that I think are the parts of my identity or whatever.
I get that, yeah, because that, obviously that's part of your personality, and those are difficult things to separate. I'm curious, and I'm not going to prod this question because I even wouldn't be able to answer it myself, but if the job was taken away, part of the identity would go with that, how huge a gap would that leave? And I think that's kind of an open-ended question for everybody to ponder. I don't know the answer for me, but one thing I can definitely share from personal experience is, so last year I decided to take a month, kind of a very mini retirement, zero work whatsoever. And you know what? It was one of the simplest things to do on a physical, practical level. I just closed my laptop, removed the email app from my phone, job a good, not a problem. However, on an emotional, psychological level, completely different story. Ideas, creative things coming into mind, which is great. I was expecting that. But there was also, okay, I need to do this for September. Then I need to start working on the pipeline of clients for following year and things like that. So that was very difficult to switch off. But that's not what surprised me. What really surprised me is the fact how I know how much I enjoy what I do, but I did not realize how much my ego enjoys what I do, because it was missing the kind of subtle validation, I guess, that comes from working with people, them liking, agreeing with what you said, using the tools that I give them and then in benefiting them and them developing and me seeing how the fruits of my work come to life. That was surprising. It's a nice feeling, but I didn't realize how much my ego needed that. Because then I did a test. I said, okay, I was thinking I'm going to do another month off for August, entire like 2 months straight. But then I thought, okay, I need it because I had some commitments. So actually I'll do a day and a half or a bit of work because I had commitments with clients. And you know what? That day and a half, a week for a month, the ego liked that. It was just enough. So my identity is definitely tied to my work. I'm not going to lie about that. And I know I need to be active to separate that as well. But it does bring the question of, you know, how much of us are we at work and how much we are at home? Because when we bring the concept of work-life balance, which seems to be, from what I've been reading yesterday, the top priority for most leaders, HR departments, which is great, but my honest opinion is we haven't got a clue how to go about this. And it's a tag at the best at the moment. We are the same person at work that we are at home on many levels, leaving identity aside for a bit. So the work-life balance suggests that these are opposing forces, and they're not. We can't look at it that way. And I had Wim Fouquet on the podcast a few months ago. We were talking about this, and he suggests looking at energy balancing between work and life as a nicer way of looking at that. Do you find it difficult to kind of switch from work time to private time? How does that look for you?
Well, I mean, I'll say that I'm the first person, if my friend says that they've got an idea or they want to develop something, I'm the first person to say like, yes, let me do your marketing, right? So, I mean, I love that part of it. I find it exciting and, you know, to also bring whatever you do with you and help people and give, you know, give advice and things like that. You know, I go and get my hair cut and, you know, the hairdresser says, oh, you know, I'm having difficulty, you know, because the first thing you ask, right, is what you do. And I say, well, I'm in online marketing. And then they say, well, I'm having difficulty with my Instagram account. What can I, you know, you transfer and you share knowledge and things like that. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think because my job works or lives ultimately online, like you, if I turn off my computer, I don't work, because without that, I can't, like, there's nothing, you know, if I'm not reachable, I'm not reachable. And, you know, I really try.
Easy.
Yeah. And I really try to live by that. I also try and exemplify that, because I know that, you know, I have people who work with me and my team and stuff. I want them to be able to switch off when they go off on leave, or, you know, they go home. So I know that I have to be able to do that, so that they have also that example, because I don't expect anybody in my team to answer, you know, calls or emails during their time off, right? Mm. I mean, that's my indication of a good team, is that we can cover everybody. We've got everybody's back. So you can take some time off. And so I really try to do that as well. Obviously, you know, if somebody calls me in an absolute emergency, then some things, you know, it's also, some things can happen. But yeah, no, I really try to not, as much as I can control it, not take my work home with me. But inevitably, you wake up in the morning and you're like, right, what's on today? And before I've even had breakfast, checking the calendar, what's going on, mentally planning, organizing, whatever. And then coming home in the evening, I mean, so with this whole, you know, hybrid or remote working and stuff, I decided actively, I come to the office. And I live like not even 3 kilometers away from the office. It would be so easy for me to just stay home. Most of my team are remote most of the time, but I come into the office. I need that 10 minutes of, you know, cycle ride or 20 minutes on the bus just to clear my like mental space.
Yep.
And I think that for me is a ritual that I learned is important and stuff, because this, when you get home, you're already like, decompressed.
Separated spaces. Yeah. Separate spaces. And I did, last time we spoke, I did see the view out of your office windows. Oh, don't blame you. If I had that view, definitely it's a spectacular view of Zurich. So definitely, I get that. See, that's the point where the 9-to-5 concept, for me, it's completely dead. Genuinely, for most office workers, for outside kind of manufacturing and things like that, it's a dead concept. You just kind of emphasize that, because no matter what you do, we work. So maybe I say outside of physical work, physical labor, I would say that it's a dead concept, because creative workers, the brain doesn't work that way. Not, I don't know many people who can completely switch off their brain after 5 o'clock and not think about work, whether you want it or not. You'll get an idea halfway through a dinner or when you're taking a shower in the evening. That's just how it works. Separate conversation. I'm curious, one thing, I'll put you on the spot here a little bit, but I'd like you to relate on to your personal practices, personal experiences, and what you've seen. What advice would you give to someone who might be struggling with the identity becoming too much of, their own identity becoming too much related to work, connected to work in an unhealthy way? Anything that you comes to mind, what you've seen, what you do yourself to try and potentially regain that sense of balance?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think firstly, to discover or to define the unhealthy element to it, right? When does it become an issue, or when does it become something that's negatively impacting your life? Because I mean, you've said it already, you know, you identify so much with what you do, but it seems to be very positive. You don't, you know, maybe you push yourself too far and you go towards burnout. And then that point, okay, so identifying what are the key points that you can flag before you get to a burnout, right? So what are the things that you need to be aware of? You know, is it that you're not sleeping? Is it that you, you know, constantly, I don't know, online 20 hours out of 24, or I don't know what it is, but it's got to be very individual, right? What are those trigger points? And then just in general, you know, find something to do that is uniquely yours outside, right? And I just go back to a couple of years ago. So I had a back injury and I decided, you know, I'm done with conventional medical advice. I don't want to have any surgeries. I don't want to do any of the things that they want to do. I'm going to do Tai Chi. I just decided that that's what I was going to do because I read that, you know, it's very good for you. And yeah, so I just joined up in this group and mostly elderly people going and doing Tai Chi in the park. And I loved it. And it became so much a part of what I did and my identity. Every time I would be talking, even to strangers, and they say, well, you know, I've got a bad shoulder or I've got a bad, you've got to try, you've got to do Tai Chi. Stop what you're doing. Fire your physiotherapist, your chiropractor, whatever. They don't know anything. You've got to do this, right? So find something that makes you that excited or passionate or something that's completely, completely not related to anything in your work that really lets you switch off and could be something meditative like Tai Chi or sports or something like that, you know, like being alone in sport, going running or going to the gym or whatever. Could be something that you do in a team that's stimulating because you're doing it with other people, like, I don't know, dancing or I don't know, whatever things people do. But yeah, playing in a band, something that's, yeah, maybe creative or at least that's using your brain for a completely different function and something that gets you really excited and then commit and stick to it. I think what you said, you go to the gym 3 times a week, that's impressive. I mean, I managed for about 6 months to go a couple times a week and it was tough. Mm-hmm. It's really like every morning, yeah, like, ugh, again. So yeah, but you've got to find something that really drives you and really brings that, like, you know, excitement to go and do something. And then you discover quite quickly there are other parts of your identity. It's not just what you do.
Absolutely amazing advice. Thank you very much for that. I can find it relatable on many levels, but yeah, it's finding those things out outside of work, who you are outside of work, to not just fill that gap, as I said, according to my assumption, to my theory.
And if you don't have time, make time. No one gives you time.
Right? Exactly.
No one's going to tell you, okay, now you have, you know, go and do that. You have to just say, and now I switch.
Yes.
Off. It's done now.
Watch one episode less of that show on Netflix than you were intending today and do something else. I'm not vilifying Netflix. I love it. I'll sometimes binge.
It's also a good way to switch off. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you do that day in, day out, every week for months, that's how it ends up. So you can save that time. If I can talk about the gym element that you said, two things that helped me in maintaining that, apart from the kind of the purpose I've got from a physical movement point of view, I stopped going to commercial gyms, kind of the main chain gyms. I prefer a slightly more committed environment of people type of CrossFit gyms, not CrossFit itself, but gyms of that sort. But the main game changer for me is I work with a coach. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to be doing. I'm going in for an hour, 2 times a week, 3 times a week, and we do work. He handles that.
You have an appointment. You've got to go.
Yeah, but it's the fact that I enjoy it more, because then I don't need to think. I focus on the part that I enjoy most. I'm one of those crazy people that likes physical exercise. Sports has always been part of my life. We just go and do. So he removes the boring element of what should we do. And before I was working with a coach at every session, I had a coach who was creating my programs. So I had a program written out for 4 weeks, 3 days a week. The only thing I had to do, apart from turning up the gym, was decide how much weight I'm going to put on a bar, how I'm going to lift, or what I'm going to do. That was the only thing. The decision-making process was removed from that. So much fun. So if gyms daunt you, I get that. They can be a daunting place. Try a different gym, less commercial, and work with a coach who will guide you through and give you a program so you've got focus, you've got purpose, you know what you need to do for the next 4 weeks. And that's when the fun starts, and you might enjoy it. If not, fair enough. Try something different. Ideally, a sport, physical activity, or anything else.
Yeah.
Right. Final segment, just to kind of wrap us up. Next few weeks, next few months, the end of the year, start of next year, however far you want to look at it, what have you got coming up? What are you excited about in your work life, your personal life, anything at all?
Excited about? Well, I'm going on holiday on Friday. So in 2 days, I'll be going to Portugal. So I'm very excited about that. But yeah, otherwise, I'm excited. I mean, just some of the projects that I've been working on in a long time, they are slow coming, right? When you have like a little passion project at work that doesn't have anything to do with your clients or doesn't have anything to do with your, you know, day-to-days and stuff, but you slowly start to see it take small steps forward, and it's, hopefully coming towards something. So I'm very excited about that in the new year, what all of that's going to bring. We'll have to see. Yeah. I mean, for me, more than anything, I'm just looking forward to, just keep developing in my work, you know, because I'm also relatively new to being a head of online marketing or a team lead and things like that. So I'm still learning a lot. And I'm really excited about doing some more training.
Is there anything that Advanced Metrics has up its sleeve in the next few months that people should be looking out for?
Well, more in a practical sense, if you speak German, we do a webinar. So we're going to have a webinar on the 29th of November. We talk about online marketing and privacy. So for us, data compliance is very important. So we have a regular session on LinkedIn as well.
Fantastic. For those listening live, there you go. You know what you do. We need to do in a couple of weeks' time. For those listening later on to the recording of the podcast, apologies. Well, all I can say is you should have tuned into the live session. But thanks for tuning in anyway. Natalia, it was an absolute pleasure. Genuinely, thank you very much for a very interesting and deep at some point discussion. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Okay, so that was Natalia Morgan. Genuinely a fascinating discussion, in my opinion. It's a topic that is close to my heart, and I think it's something that we all should pay a lot more attention to, how we relate to work, because it's such a big part of our lives. And as I said, the work-life balance debate rages on as one of the main topics of our working lives, which again, I'm not convinced of how we're approaching it for sure, and also whether we should be calling it work-life balance. Much prefer the option of calling it energy balancing between what we do, how we spend our time between work and our personal lives. That's it from me. Thank you very much for tuning in. Until next time.